of the Supreme Court of Virginia. We welcome the lawyers and we welcome the public at large who may be listening on a special queue that is available to listen to arguments that are being made here at the court. The clerk will call the first case.
Emmanuel Worship Center versus City of Petersburg. Leonard Myers II, Appellant's Counsel. Andrew R. McRoberts, Deborah L. Mallory, Appellee's Counsel.
Mr. Myers, you may begin.
Absolutely, thank you, Chief Justice, and I'll reserve, I'm Leonard Myers, Counsel for Emmanuel Worship Center. And I'll reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
5 minutes, you said?
Yes.
Five,
yes.
All right.
May it please Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Court. As I mentioned earlier, I'm coming before you concerning Emmanuel Worship Center versus City of Petersburg. This comes to you on a bill of review that was denied by the Circuit Court for the City of Petersburg. And the main basis for that being being denied was the fact that they did not believe that a bill of review was proper for an equitable action of selling real estate to pay a tax lien. And the other issue is that even if bill of review was, they felt that even if the court believed that it was a proper vehicle, that it believed that there was no error in the original ruling in this case, which was CL 18639, where a decree of sale was entered to sell my client's property, Emmanuel Worship Center, to pay taxes that should not have been assessed against the church for the use of that that property. I'll just say that with respect to the bill of review, it was indeed proper. This was a case that began in equity, in order to begin a tax sale, that is done through equity, and then is completed in equity if the court believes that that the motion for sale is proper.
Counsel, could you help me with something? This is somewhat of an unusual device, and so I had to educate myself on the subject.
Yes.
As I understand the constitutional protection, it doesn't cover any property that the church owns. So if the church owns an investment property or a bookstore or a coffee shop or something like that, that would not be exempt from taxation. Is that correct?
My understanding of the situation, Your Honor, is that where a church owns, where there's a church involved, the church owns the property and the church is using that property exclusively for religious purposes, then that's going to constitute an exemption under the Constitution of Virginia.
So my question is, how do we know on this record that this property that was subject to the tax sale was used as a minister's residence or for worship, as opposed to, you know, an apartment building, a shopping center, or whatever? I understand not every church does that.
Yes.
But like when I was an elder, the church owned this apartment building that it was going to do something with at some point, but it was functionally a landlord, even though it was titled in the church. And so, you know, the record has to show error. And so that's my question, is how do we know on this record that the property was in fact used for worship or a minister's residence as opposed to something else?
Yes, Your Honor, I see your point. With respect to this, this particular determination, there's never any evidence entertained concerning how the property was actually being used. It was proffered that it was being used exclusively for religious purposes, and it was owned by a church. And then we went into some detail that it was quote unquote a learning annex where where religious things were being taught in the learning and annex, and some other things too was being used to distribute items to the poor. Nevertheless, the court took the position that even if all of that is true, you still come up short. You still miss the statute of limitations with regard to 58.1-3984, because the court believed that that was the proper mechanism to challenge any assessment. So,
well, this is Justice Kelsey. May I ask you also a question following up on the last one? In the tax delinquency proceeding, were you given any opportunity to put on your evidence to establish that, in fact, it is a worship center of the church, it is necessarily exempt because of the Constitution, and that there was no Petersburg ordinance at the time for exemptions or challenges to exemptions? Were you able to put on evidence to prove those things, or were you shut down because of the application of a statutory assessment review and challenge statute?
Well, that's exactly what happened in this case. If we were granted our motions, we would have moved forward with presentation of evidence with respect to how the property was being used. There was some discussion about the same thing that Justice Sokola just mentioned, where the circuit court said, well, what if this was just a parking lot and this parking lot was being used? How is the city going to even know that this parking lot's being used for religious purposes? I would say that there was never really any contention that the property wasn't owned by a church, wasn't being used for religious purposes.
Well, what I'm getting at is, my question is, the delinquency order did not adjudicate the question. So your best win in this case is to get an adjudication.
Sorry, cannot hear justice.
Okay. My point of my question is that in the delinquency proceeding, can anyone else hear me?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Justice Kelsey. I see your mic indicating that it's on, but I cannot hear you. It's going blank.
Okay. Tell me when you can start hearing me.
Ms. Myers, can you hear me?
I can, Mr. Chief Justice.
Good. I can hear you as well. We didn't have that problem with Mr. McRoberts, but can you hear me as well?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Myers, you wanted 5 minutes rebuttal time, and you still have that on the charts here. All right. You may begin.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Going back to Justice Kelsey's question with regard to whether it was a finding of fact that the property was indeed owned by the church and used exclusively for religious purposes, that did not occur. There was never any question raised concerning that the property is owned by the church and being used exclusively for religious purposes. It wasn't until the Appellee's brief and the amicus brief was that ever brought into question. But the fact of the matter is, it was never any finding of fact that the property was owned by the church or used exclusively.
Right. Well, counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. The reason for the question is that under your legal theory, if correct, your only remedy would be able to have an opportunity to put on that evidence and that evidence be adjudicated. You don't get the benefit of just saying it's so and it is so. The bill of review, if it were properly granted, would simply vacate the earlier statute of limitations holding and allow you an opportunity to put on evidence. Am I following your logic correctly?
Well, what happened in the trial court, Your Honor, was that the position was taken that, well, even if you do prove that property is owned by the church, used for exclusive purposes, we don't have a problem with that, what we're saying is, even if all of that is true, you did not afford yourself the opportunity to actively pursue as a plaintiff 58.1-3984, and because it's now more than 3 years.
Right, what I'm saying is that if you're right on your legal theory, assume for the sake of argument you're correct, that it's a self-executing provision under the Constitution, that the statute of limitations doesn't apply because there was no exemption process in Petersburg to begin with, much less an objection to it, you still have to prove your case, which you were not allowed to do at the delinquent tax sale proceeding. Isn't that your win under your best legal theory? Prove your case in terms of the facts.
If we prove that the property is owned by a church and used exclusively for religious purposes, to me that what that does is it allows for all the arguments that we're making to be of effect. And the situation is we weren't even allowed to get that form. As far as we got was that, I don't really need to hear that, because even if it's true, you're not going to be able to prevail anyway. And so that's why we only got as far as the, the pleas that I presented to the court, which were denied. So, we didn't even get that far. So, if we had opportunity to present evidence that the church owns the property and uses it for exclusively for religious purposes, then again, the court's position would be wrong. So,
can I? Mr. Myers, this is Justice Goodwin. It seems like to me you're talking past Justice Kelsey's question. I mean, he was just asking you, isn't the relief you're asking for is the opportunity to go back to the circuit court and prove your case?
I suppose that could be, but the thrust of our argument is that with the trial court and the opposing party and ourselves, they believed, or the court believed, that even if we did prove that we were a church,
and if we say that they're wrong in doing that, you get to go back and prove your case, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't want you, counsel, to agree so readily to Justice Goodwin's question. It sounds to me what you're saying is the trial court said, even if you are using this library for a purely religious purpose, you cannot prevail because 3984 gave you an adequate remedy at law, which you did not pursue. So it sounds to me that the answer to the question may be going back and proving our facts does not answer this case, because the crux of the case is the trial court said, even if I believe all of that, 3984 will not allow you to prevail. So I for my purposes, I need for you to tell me why 3984 does not block your case.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll go for the lowest hanging fruit first, and that is 3984 statute of limitations only works if we're bringing an action of our own volition against the city to challenge the computation of an assessment. However, if it's used as an affirmative defense, then there is no statute of limitations. So that's our principal argument. The second argument is that 3984 is used to correct an erroneous assessment in the context of, the city assessment was too high, you know, we shouldn't have to pay that much, you know, that sort of argument, as opposed to whether the ability or the legality of being able to tax in the first place is available. And so 3984 really doesn't address that. I would say that.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. At the time of that 3984 hearing, had you been, had you requested an exemption, had an exemption been denied, and was there a Petersburg ordinance even addressing the question of an exemption, putting into place the self-executing provisions of the Constitution?
Well, Your Honor, the ability to place a mechanism in place to consider exemptions under 58.1-3605 was never taken advantage of by the city. So there's really no regulatory statutory framework from which the city of Petersburg is even operating.
So you hadn't asked for an exemption to be recognized by the municipality pursuant to the Constitution, and they did not adjudicate an exemption one way or the other administratively. So you show up in a 3984 hearing. Well, you're not even showing up in an 8934 hearing. You're getting jammed on the 8934 in it as a ostensibly an affirmative defense to a series of assessments that you were never exempted from because they don't have any exemption ordinance in Petersburg.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, it was also proffered and provided as exhibits previous applications for exemptions with the city that went unanswered by the city for years. And so my client, operating under previous oral representation from the previous assessor, who they talked to, who's no longer there, or who had been removed at some point, told them that they were exempt. But again,
it seems to me, tell me if I'm right on this, and we'll hear about it in just a few minutes. At that point, the inference appears to be that the municipality believed that if they don't actually have an ordinance extending the exemption, that it doesn't exist in Petersburg.
Well, you know, the way I understand it, Your Honor, is that the city of Petersburg believes that they have a valid exemption scheme in place, despite the fact that there's no actual city ordinance authorizing that particular scheme under the guise of 58.1-3605. The city admitted as much that they are aware of any statute that prescribes any specific method by which a property owner must apply for an exemption. Plaintiff is not aware of any ordinance or ordinances that require a property owner to file an application for exemption as well. That was in response to our discovery propounded on the city. So there is no regulatory or statutory framework, no ordinance in the city, just in the city of Petersburg, that allows them to even.
Mr. Myers, you've done below the 5 minutes you wanted to use. It's 4 minutes and 45 seconds. Do you want to reserve that for a rebuttal?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Mr. McRoberts.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew McRoberts, representing the city of Petersburg in this case. The circuit court judge made the right decision in dismissing this for several reasons. One is that a bill of review simply does not apply in a statutory delinquent tax sale procedure. It's not a suit in equity. It is, in fact, a statutory proceeding brought by the local government to sell the property. There's no doubt that.
If I may interrupt you briefly, under code 58.1-3967, it states that proceedings for the delinquency action shall be by, quote, bill in equity, end quote.
Yes, sir.
That doesn't make the proceeding an equitable proceeding when the statute says it can only be initiated by one particular kind of incredibly important document, which is the bill in equity? Isn't it just codifying an equitable remedy and saying so expressly?
Well, Your Honor, there is no right for the local government to sell property aside from the statute. And so, yes, the statute does give the right to an equitable remedy. There's no doubt about that.
So why is the bill of review then an applicable procedural device to address a prior equitable judgment that was initiated in equity by a bill of equity?
Well, it wasn't initiated in equity. It was initiated according to the statute, seeking a remedy.
A bill in equity is the way you initiate an equitable proceeding. And the statute says you initiate this proceeding with a bill in equity.
Yes, sir.
So what am I missing? We're talking past each other. I don't understand.
No. I mean, I think you have it exactly right. I mean, the statute does require a bill in equity, and it provides for a decree at the end. And so it has many of the same attributes of an equitable proceeding. But instead of being a pure equitable proceeding out of common law, this is something that is provided for by statute.
Again, I hate to interrupt you so many times, but there's no such thing as a pure equitable proceeding out of common law. They're completely different subject matters.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'd like to move on, Your Honor.
Okay.
In that sort of a proceeding, counsel has suggested that, well, if I bring a 3984 tax claim as a affirmative defense, then that's okay in a bill in equity or a delinquent tax proceeding. It simply is not. I mean, this court has time and time again for really 100 years held that claims for erroneous assessment to correct an assessment, which is what he's asking for. He says, I have an exemption. You should not have assessed me. The proper way to do that is either through 3984 or through an administrative proceeding like 58.1-3980. And this court has time and time again for 100 years said you have to follow that process strictly. That is not a process that was allowed in common law. You must follow it strictly, and you've got to conform to the statutory timeframes as well.
Counsel, so, this is Justice Mims.
Yes, sir.
In that 100 years, how many times has this court been asked to determine that question when the defense of the taxpayer is, I have a constitutional provision that says I don't owe the taxes?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with any time that the bill of review has been adjudicated in that way.
I'm not either. I believe this is a question of first impression. So I'm curious about the past 100 years, but I think that we are really writing on a blank slate.
Well, the problem is if the court follows the center's line of thinking, is that if we own property and we use it for our purely religious purposes, then we have an automatic exemption. And we can raise it really at any time. As you know, real property can be sold up to 15, 20 years later after taxes are delinquent. And so according to this argument, the 21 days to appeal a delinquent tax adjudication can come and go. No appeal to the Supreme Court of Virginia. The
counsel,
3 years
counsel,
that they have
counsel,
to adjudicate
counsel,
a tax assessment
counsel.
Comes and goes. And then 20 years later, they get to say, I have an exemption.
Mr. McRoberts, I think Justice Mims is trying to ask a question, and then when he finishes, I have one.
I'm sorry, apologize. Go ahead.
The issue that the appellant brought to the court was not that taxes are delinquent, but that I have a reason why I don't have to pay those delinquent taxes. The reason that the appellant brought to the court was there are no taxes. There is no delinquency. That's the question that's before us today, is it not?
And that could have been raised in a 3984 action independently as a counterclaim, perhaps. And honestly, it perhaps could be brought in a delinquent tax claim. Obviously, even if it is proper, it would need to be brought within 3 years because that's the statute of limitations that's been placed on it.
I help me understand, and I think maybe you were trying to answer But I still don't understand, and it's just, I find this record and this proceeding very confusing. The property is brought, the property is brought forward for a sale for delinquent taxes. That I think you have agreed is an equitable proceeding. The bill of review says to the trial court, there is an error on the face of the record that if you go back and look at it, you will see that there is clear error on the face of the record. The clear error on the face of the record is no one is contesting that this property is used for religious purposes. It has an exemption under the Constitution, which is self-executing. Court, if you look at your record, you will see that. Why? I don't understand why they couldn't do that.
Well, Your Honor, the judge specifically said in his decision that he did take a look at the record and found no error on the face of it. Counsel has already conceded that there was no contention that it was used as a minister's residence or for worship. And I would go one further. There was no allegation of that either. It was, I have an automatic exemption because we own the property. And then
now, I thought he said there was no contention that their proffer was that it was used for purely religious purposes.
But purely religious purposes can mean a lot of things other than worship and housing a minister. Those are the only two things that get an exemption here. And there was no allegation, there was no contention or argument, and there was certainly no proof. And so as a result, given the fact that exemptions are construed strictly against the taxpayer and it's the taxpayer's burden, then I'm afraid that the, whether it was the right result, wrong reason, I don't know, but the judge appropriately threw this out.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. So, but as I understood it, at that earlier proceeding, the statute of limitations point rendered all those factual issues moot. And the trial judge did not have a factual hearing on whether or not this annex or whatever it is fits within the self-executing provisions of the Constitution. I mean, somebody's got to figure that out. We obviously can't do it on appeal. So isn't that the error is not, you should have given them the exemption. The error is they made an allegation they had a constitutional exemption, judge, but you should have given them a chance to prove they had it, but you didn't. You hosed them on the statute of limitations, which is incredibly odd because statute of limitations don't apply to affirmative defenses. They apply to assertions, in personam assertions seeking a remedy as opposed to a defense. But those are two separate issues in the same question, but stick to the first one. That's the most important one. Why wasn't the error not giving the church an argument, an evidentiary opportunity to say, really, it is for religious purposes or worship, whatever they wanted to say?
Well, Your Honor, a bill of review specifically is the review of a suit in equity to reopen the record and to search for an error on the face of it. It's not a brand new trial. It's not, yeah, let's go back and redo everything we did previously. In this case, the judge did search the record and found no error. And that's all a bill of review actually allows.
Counsel, was there a proffer or attempt to proffer the record that the court, shut down essentially?
No, sir. And in fact, again, to go back to my point earlier, there was no contention that it was used for a minister's residence or for worship. This particular building is called a learning center.
The analogy that came to my mind, it was like a plea of res judicata where you have to prove it and you have to show, look, we've already addressed this and here's the record from the prior proceeding that shows this was previously adjudicated, as opposed to a bald assertion and a pleading that this was so. And so that's my struggle in this case, is the state of the record and figuring out if we can even get to remand or not.
Well, Your Honor, I think that in this case, there was never a contention, any factual contention that it actually qualified for an exemption. And so therefore there was nothing on the record to review to find error in. And of course, that case in which that it could have been shown perhaps was reduced to a final order. The property was ordered sold. The 21 days came and went. In fact, the 30 days came and went. There was no appeal to this court.
Mr. McRoberts, this is Justice Kelsey again, but I must have my understanding wrong, but at the earlier hearing, at the sale hearing, I understand the trial judge to say, look, you've missed the deadlines for challenging this stuff. Go home. I didn't see anything in the record that said, yeah, we need to have a hearing, find out whether this learning annex is a Sunday school or whatever. So the error is not that he ruled one way or the other on the subject of the facts, but he didn't rule at all on the subject of the facts because he applied a statutory limitation period to a challenge to an assessment or the lack of an exemption. And Petersburg doesn't even have an exemption ordinance, at least at the time of this. So isn't that the obvious error? He did not make the factual finding one way or the other. And obviously the parties didn't develop it because his logic precluded it.
I understand that, Justice Kelsey. The fact is there was no invitation or expectation that the judge was going to open a hearing on that because there was no allegation that there was in fact an exemption that actually meets the law. I mean, as a matter of law, even if the court had opened a public hearing and or an evidentiary hearing and said, present your evidence, the evidence would have shown, and this is what was alleged and what's even been contended today, is it was used for religious purposes and we owned it. That's it. I mean, that was the allegation, that was the contention, and that's all the evidence would have shown. Pleading is essential as proof. There was no allegation that it was used for minister's residence or for worship. And in fact, worship never been an allegation even today.
Counsel?
Yes.
This is Justice Mims. I know based upon your very substantial experience with local governments, and I had some experience in this area myself up in Loudoun, a fast-growing community, but there's a lot of ancillary uses. In fact, the Constitution even mentions ancillary uses that come within this particular tent. If you say it's for religious purposes and you are then able to show that it is a learning center where you have Sunday school and where you tutor refugees and immigrants and where you have daycare for people whose parents are working, and it all is done under the ambit of a church, that it is potentially tax exempt. Don't you agree?
Your Honor, that's not my understanding of the law. I believe it has to be associated with a worship center. And in this case, there's no evidence or contention that it is.
So in other words, if you have a Sunday school, it's not affiliated with worship?
That's not my understanding of the law, Your Honor.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, you and I have a different understanding then. Thank you, sir.
Well, isn't the problem in this case is that there's no evidence of what it was? It could have been a bowling alley. It could have been a Sunday school class. It could have been subject to the exemption, but there's no evidence of anything.
Yes, sir. And our position is that the ability to contest a tax assessment is a purely statutory grant of a remedy. And the remedy comes with limitations. It's as much a part of the cause of action as the assessment being erroneous itself. And so it has to be brought pursuant to the terms of the statute. It could be brought as a counterclaim, perhaps. But in this case, it wasn't. And in fact, the court was correct in its decision that that this kind of matter should not have been brought in a delinquent tax collection matter. And then on appeal, it certainly should not have an end run on the appeal process by a bill of review. Thank you.
Mr. Myers, you have 4 minutes and 45 seconds left.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I would just like to clarify a few things that were made in the previous argument. There were allegations made in response to the city's initiation of this action to sell the property. There were allegations that that this was a church and that the property was being used for religious purposes. Those allegations were further made in the plea and bar and plea and recruitment recoupment And then those were reiterated and argued in proffered in court. And
Mr. Myers, I need to ask you this question. You may or may not be right, but where can I find it in the record of this case?
I cannot point to a place in the record where the court made a factual determination property was indeed owned by a church and used for.
My question is, where in the record was the evidence of anything actually submitted to the court?
In putting together the joint appendix on this particular case, our understanding in conversation with the deputy clerk in the deputy clerk of court for the city of Petersburg was that the only part of the record that the Supreme Court wanted with regard to previous case CL 18-639 was the actual decree of sale slash final order, and that was it. So beyond that,
did you have a court reporter present for the hearing?
There were court reporters present for some hearings, not others. I cannot recall at this time which particular hearing that court reporters were available or did take a transcript. But
so if I can't find it in the record, it may be because there was not a court reporter present transcribing the hearing. Is that proper?
Well, I would just say again, Your Honor, that again, the what the clerk of the city of Chesapeake or city of Petersburg was directed to do was to only include the final order slash decree of sale from CL 18-639 to include as part of this particular.
All right.
Mr. Myers, this is Justice Goodwin. I have a question for you. I thought that the objections here, I mean, the assignments of error here don't have to do with facts. They have to do with the law. One, the trial court basically stated it doesn't matter whether or not this thing was actually tax exempt. A bill of review is not the proper vehicle to use for the court to examine this. Right?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to a bill of review, it can be reviewed for legal error. And so that was the thrust of our assignments of error, was that the court reached the wrong legal conclusions.
And the other argument I thought was, no matter how righteous your facts are concerning the fact that you're entitled to a tax exemption, the statute of limitations prevents you from challenging the assessment that was made years ago. I thought, once again, it's a question of law, not one of fact.
Yes, Your Honor, and that was the basis for legal error in our assignments of error. It was very frustrating to have that statute applied in the way that it was, especially with respect to even being prevented from attacking the city's what they determined to be delinquent taxes on the property. Through an affirmative defense of applying, any of these statutes, 58.1-39 or 58.1-3965. So we thought that was a very proper mechanism for that the court could reconsider how it applied those statutes and give it the opportunity to.
All right, Mr. Myers, your time has expired. The clerk will call the next case.